Junior. I guess I'm married to Muth Senior. But we are going to talk about something I think that is a hot button for so many, and that is mastering social media with joy. I think some of us are intimidated by social media, or we certainly don't do it with joy. It's more of an obligation, or maybe we just don't understand the why. Why is it important, and how it fits in with our lives? And so Thomas and I are going to banter back and forth talking about social media and how to kind of approach it with a more grace-filled, joy-filled attitude. I've known Thomas for a long time. Author Media, who he has started, has done my web stuff for a really long time now, and I get compliments on my website all the time. So if you're interested in having some web stuff done, I wholeheartedly recommend Author Media. But we've known each other for a while through conferences and writing conferences, and I'm just excited to introduce Thomas to you, and he and I will get going right now. So, Thomas, here you go.
Jump in. All right, thank you. And just as quick clarification for those of y'all who just logged in, you can ask a question by clicking that button, and you can also chat down here. So we're going to get to a lot of your questions. We have a lot of questions that came in by email. But first, I'd like to talk about six things that can make social media overwhelming. And just to poll, if you find social media overwhelming, drag the slider over to hot, just to say, yes, I find social media overwhelming. A lot of people find it very stressful, and they do it out of duty and guilt. So their agent says you've got to do social media, or they go to a writer's conference and they hear a guru say, if you don't do social media, no one will ever publish you and you'll die unknown and unloved. And you're like, ah! So then you go and do social media, but you're not doing it out of joy. You're doing it in this way that you're miserable while you're doing it, and you're not very effective because of that attitude and because of that. So we want to help you master social media, but we also want to help make social media less stressful and more fun. So let's go through the things that make it overwhelming. The first is that there's too much to learn. And a lot of people feel really stressed out by social media, especially if you're older and you didn't grow up with technology. I was helping my grandmother get on Facebook, and she is, I think, 84, 85, and you know, it was interesting watching her get on Facebook because there was so much that she had to learn. She found it really overwhelming. And so just to give you a couple of tips, first, I want to release you that you don't have to do everything. So a lot of authors, every time they hear someone talk about a new social network, they feel like, oh, I have to do this. So in this talk, you're going to hear Mary talking about Pinterest. She really likes Pinterest. She's had some great results from Pinterest. And I will be talking up Google Plus because I really like Google Plus and I've had great results from Google Plus. Don't do both Pinterest and Google Plus. It's too much. You can't master it all. And so I just want to release you. And we'll talk more about focusing later. Another thing I want to encourage you to do is to embrace fiddling. There's a sense of childlike wonder that each one of us had as a child where learning was fun and discovery was fun. And fiddling with something until it broke and then figuring out how to fix it was an exciting adventure and not this duty-filled kind of journey. And so if you can reignite that sense of childlike wonder, everything gets to be a lot more fun. And part of that means, you know, just not taking your work so seriously, not taking your books so seriously. I know we all feel like my cause, my issue, if it doesn't get out there, the world will die. And in reality, you know, I believe that there's a sovereign God that presides over the destinies of nations and over the destinies of individuals, and it's going to be okay. So just take a deep breath and enjoy the journey, because it really is and can be a lot more fun. Another tip is to read the book Inbound Marketing, and Mary, if you could post a link to that in the chat. This is, if you read only one book on social media, this is the book to read. It's in our company, we don't allow anyone to apply for a job or get a job here until they've read Inbound Marketing. And the book is their very first job interview. The first interview is a book discussion of inbound marketing. That's how important we feel the book is. In fact, I was going to write a book on social media until I found Inbound Marketing, and I put it on the back burner. And I'm just recently started working on a book again specifically for fiction authors, because if you write fiction, everything is a little bit harder for you, and I'm sorry about that. So we'll talk about that, how to do social
Thanks,
media
Thomas.
If you write fiction.
Love you a lot.
But also, yeah, if you write fiction, you don't. Social media is not as important. So if you're, I know many, many fiction authors who don't do any social media, and they do just fine. For nonfiction, social media is pretty critical. And then finally, consider the Bestseller Society. It's a great way. It's got a lot of classes from Mary. It's got classes from myself on how to use social media, how to do marketing, how to write your book that will help you learn it the easy way. Because there's two ways in writing to learn things. There's the hard way, which is figuring it out yourself, piece by piece, making the mistakes and learning it, which is kind of what Mary and I both went through. I started blogging back before the word even existed. I was writing, you know, strategy guides for video games back in the early 2000s, late 90s. And check that out. We'll have some info for how to get a free month and a free year of that later.
Thomas, right? We're getting some comments that there's a lot of fading in and out. I just wanted to let you know that.
Okay. So I will – is this better? Can you all hear me now? All right, so the second challenge that people have is that social media is too much work. They approach social media like a lot of, I'd never get it cleaned up. And in reality, it's not impossible, but it is overwhelming when you look at it all at once. And some of you, you know, have kids who have rooms like this. Not that my room ever looked like this when I was a kid. But so some points
Thomas,
on
we're
this.
Still having some bad audio. I'm super sorry, but everybody is complaining about it, and you're the one that they're having problems with. So you might want to change your headset to a phone or something
else. Okay. Is this better? If you can't hear me, check.
People are saying
check
it's cutting in and out. I think if you're having problems with audio, I think it's better to go on your phone. So go ahead and call 949-202-4265. Your attendee pin is 76758#. And anyone that's on the phone is having no problem hearing him. So go ahead and just and again, you'll be able to listen to the audio, which it will be a better quality afterwards if you're getting frustrated.
Okay.
So try phone.
All right. Very good. Sorry about that, everybody. So when it comes to social media being too much work, it is for a lot of authors, because most authors waste most of their time on social media. So there's a lot of things that you can do on social media, and a lot of it doesn't scale. The phrase that we use in technology for taking something from really small to really big, really fast. So can your efforts double in the next 6 weeks? Well, certain things double just fine. If you're sending out a tweet to your followers and you have twice as many followers 6 weeks from now, that's no additional work. And so that's a good activity to partake in. But if you're, say, low-value activities or things like saying happy birthday to your friends on Facebook, that isn't helping you build a platform. It isn't helping grow you, and it doesn't scale well. So if you have 1,000 friends now and you have 2,000 friends 6 weeks from now, then now you have twice as many happy birthdays to send out. Or commenting on low traffic blogs or reading irrelevant posts. A lot of people follow others on Twitter who they're not interested in, just hoping that they'll follow them back. That's a really bad approach that I don't recommend. And the only way to make that work is to use a tool like Hootsuite or those people. But they're just using Hootsuite and TweetDeck to ignore you right back. And so it just creates follower inflation. It doesn't create true influence. And then finally, you want to think like a producer, not like a consumer. And this is a big adjustment that a lot, especially beginning authors, have to go through, because we're used to consuming content. And so what we tend to do on social networks is we consume content. And that doesn't work very well because consuming doesn't help others. You know, it's not adding value. What we need to do is produce content. Say something worth listening to. Say something that's valuable for other people. Think about serving people through your posts, and that is what will spread. Mary, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I think definitely. And I also think that having, in terms of if you're blogging or tweeting or whatever, I have found that the best interaction I get is when I'm vulnerable and when I'm willing to just be a human. So adding that element of not a performance, but just being yourself really does help.
Yeah, that's good. All right, so stressor number three is that there are too many social networks. And a lot of people feel pressure to be on every social network. So I said it before, I'll say it again, don't be on every social network. My recommendation for you is to pick two social networks unless you have an assistant. So two networks that are your primary two networks. So for me, of course, I have an assistant. I have a whole company, so we have a presence on more than two. I couldn't if it were just me. But for me personally, I spend about 80% of my time on Facebook because that's where my friends are. That's where the people who are responding to my content respond to me. And then after that, Google Plus and Twitter. And I'm actually going to be shutting down my Facebook personal page soon. And I'm going to create a video on how I do that and converting it to a fan page, which is something I recommend every single one of you do if you haven't done so already. Fan pages are far more effective in every way than a personal page. And where a lot of time is wasted is authors interacting with strangers on their personal page. So I recommend that you only have real friends on your personal Facebook page and everyone else goes to your fan page. So how do you tell who's a real friend? Three rules of thumb. Rule number thumb one is the Christmas card test. If you send out Christmas cards around Christmas time, would you hand address and put a stamp on a card that goes out to this person? If yes, then they're a real friend. The second test is the couch test. If you were in their town, could you stay on, crash on their couch, and would that be awkward? If it's awkward, they're probably not a real friend. Now, the final test is the meal test. So the word companion from the Latin means co, which is with, and pan, which is food or bread. So have you shared a meal with this person? If you eat with them or have you shared a meal with them, chances are they're probably a real friend. If you've never done any of those things, you wouldn't send them a Christmas card, you couldn't crash on the couch, and you've never shared a meal with them, they're just an acquaintance. So it's just fine. It doesn't mean they're an enemy, but it also means they should go to your fan page instead of your personal page. Trying to get people to like your fan page after they friended you doesn't work. I see many, many authors begging people to go over to their fan page, and no one hardly goes. So what you have to do is convert your personal page to a fan page and then only add in people to your personal page who are real friends.
And you can, Thomas, that's, someone just asked, you can move your existing Facebook, you can do a transition from personal to fan, right? It's now available
that's
on
right.
Facebook. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
I will be doing that.
Right, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing that with mine, and I'm going to be posting a video, probably in the Bestseller Society, that's a step-by-step, here's how to do it. Actually watching me do it. I've got 2,300 fans or friends or some odd, and so you'll get to see how it's done. But you can also Google it, and you'll find step-by-step guides there.
Asked, what if you have – one quick question, Thomas. Keith asked, what if you have a personal and a fan already? I'm assuming you can't combine, correct?
You actually can sometimes. So that's where it might be helpful to have a company help you with the process. So at Author Media, we spend enough money on Facebook ads where we actually have someone at Facebook we can talk to help with these sorts of things. And so we have a lot of experience merging fan pages, merging duplicate pages. It can be done. But that you're starting to get into high levels of wizardry there, and it can go wrong. So we've seen authors go through this process, and they lose everything. If you don't have someone to call at Facebook, it just stays lost. So, we're here to help authormedia.com with that sort of advanced stuff. All right, so that's too many social networks. Pick some. And so some of you may be asking, well, how do I know which social networks to pick? Well, two things to take into consideration here. Number one is, which networks do you enjoy using already? If you get Facebook and you're hanging out on Facebook, Facebook may be a good social network for you. If you don't like Facebook, then using Facebook is probably not a good idea. But that's only one thing to consider. The other thing to consider is, where are my readers spending time? So there's a bit of a generational difference and a gender difference between the social networks. Facebook is the biggest. So everyone pretty much has a Facebook account, but not everyone is active on Facebook. And to understand who's active on Facebook, you have to look a little bit at the history of Facebook. So Facebook started off being college students only, and then it added high school students, and then they opened it up to people in general. Now, who do you think was waiting at the doors to rush into Facebook to see photos of their kids and grandkids on Facebook? It was the parents of the high school and college students. So look what just happened. We jumped a generation. The millennials in Generation Y got on Facebook first, and then their parents, the baby boomers, got on Facebook second. Generation X, people in their 30s and 40s, often they got on Twitter first. And so, you know, Mary, kind of the quintessential Gen Xer, she's very Twitter-centric. She's got, you know, 16,000 followers on Twitter, and she does a lot on Twitter. And it's because her generation is more a Twitter generation. Now, Google Plus is the wealthiest social network in terms of average income. It's also the highest educated social network by a long shot. And it's also the most masculine. So Google Plus, 60-70% masculine. It's the only social network with more guys than girls as active users. So your kind of quintessential Google Plus user is a 35-year-old male engineer with a master's degree in electrical engineering. So if you're writing a book on, you know, overcoming, you know, issues with your husband, it's not the social network for you, because most of the people on Google Plus don't have husbands. Pinterest, on the other hand, is very, very feminine. Lots and lots of women, at least here in the States. These generalizations, by the way, if you're in New Zealand or in the UK, totally don't apply. Pinterest in the UK is mostly men. Go figure. But here in the States, Pinterest is mostly women. And if you have a message and appeals to women, you can do really well on Pinterest. And Mary, tell us a little bit about the results you've had on your blog because of Pinterest.
Yeah, I used to kind of put Pinterest in a time-wasting category because since I like design blogs and I like design, I could get lost there and trying to find cute little things to pin to my little boards. But then I started thinking more proactively about how I could bless my audience and how to create little pins. So I started making pins that connected to my every single blog post that I write. And I actually will have a freebie for all of you who are participating in this webinar. It's a 10-step on how to create a pin in PicMonkey, and we'll send that to you as a PDF, free PDF download after all this is done. So you'll get an email from us later. But anyway, I wanted to share that in terms of Pinterest, I have seen my page views almost triple since I started doing this in December. So it's been amazing to watch my Google Analytics go shooting through the roof compared to where they were before I started actively looking on Pinterest. And again, I've only been doing this for like 2 months, so it's very new, but it's really, really helped boost my traffic to my website. And the other thing I would say, and I think, Thomas, you're going to talk about this, but a lot of people in the comment section are talking about Twitter and how it freaks them out. So I want to make sure we cover a little bit more about Twitter as we continue on in this discussion.
Yes, absolutely. But I will say, if Twitter freaks you out, don't do Twitter. There are more active users on Google. There are more users on Google Plus than there are on Twitter, and there is more traffic generated to websites on Pinterest than there is on Twitter, by a long shot. So Twitter is actually not the number one or even number two social network, depending on how you measure. And so, you know, a lot of authors are on Twitter, perhaps too many actually, because they often just end up talking to each other. And when you go to conferences, people really like recommending Twitter because it's one of the ways they get more followers. You know, the agents and the editors like getting followers on Twitter, so they encourage it. And they're the ones who get the biggest benefit out of Twitter. Or organizations like mine, Author Media, we get great response on Twitter to our posts because authors share our posts with each other. So there is a sense with Twitter that the people on the inside can't explain it and the people on the outside don't understand it. And so the best way to figure out Twitter is to go to twitter.com and click the big green sign-up button and then start, you know, kicking the tires and exploring. And we have some guides on Author Media for the absolute Twitter beginner, you know, how to get started on Twitter, from signing up for the very first time to following people, who to follow if you're an author. We have a lot of really great step-by-step guides. In fact, one of them has just gotten a new viral boost. Everyone's been sharing it. Or a lot of people have been sharing it in the last couple of days. It's 15 questions authors ask about Twitter. Just goes through and answers them. So, you know, don't feel guilty if you don't do Twitter. Just take a deep breath and don't do Twitter. It's okay. I'm the social media guy, and I say it's okay. So if anyone were to be advocating Twitter, it would be me. So we'll talk
about and I that love soon. Twitter, so I would say give it a try. But, again, I'm not going to bring you joy.
Right. And we'll get to it more in the social questions. All right. Overwhelming thing number four is that it's too artificial. People feel like so being active on social media cuts against their real-life interactions and their interpersonal communications, and it kind of makes people more fake. And this is a very interesting topic because, in some ways, social media allows you to have a fake persona. You know, you put on this mask and you are someone on social media that you aren't in real life. But that doesn't work very well for most people. And the trend is actually the other way, that social media is bringing an end to secrets and an end of privacy, where people are voluntarily saying what they're doing on a daily basis, what's going on in their lives, what have you. And so I will say that being artificial, being fake, doesn't work. And kind of the, you know, poster child of this is Mary. She's like the queen of authenticity, you know, on Facebook and on Twitter. And it has helped her gain a following. People are hungry for authenticity. It's what makes you effective. And so the people who complain about the fakeness, it's often they are putting on others what they see in themselves. There's a Freudian phrase for that. I can't remember it at the moment. They're projecting. And they hate the fakeness inside of them, so they're like, everyone on Twitter is fake. And it's like, well, that's not necessarily true. But I will say that authenticity takes courage. And the key to courage is love, because perfect love casts out all fear. And so, you know, ask God to give you a heart for the people that you're trying to reach on social media. The more you love your fans, the more they'll want to follow you and the more courageous you will be interacting with them. Mary?
Yes, I agree. And again, as I said, your vulnerability is what endear people to you. And then when you get to the point where you maybe have a product or a book that you'd like to sell, you can ask people for favors, and not in a like multi-level marketing way, because we all have our radar on when we get emails like that. But you can say, hey, can you do me a quick favor and just like my book on Facebook? I did this recently, like last week. I just had a new book that went up. I said, could you just like it? And I noticed that actually some people ended up buying the book, which was awesome. But it's because my readers trust me and they know my heart. And so they're more apt to help me out when I need help. Now, that means I don't ask all the time either. And I hope that I'm not always running around selling things to people and that people don't see me that way. But my heart truly is when I sit at my computer, and I'm at my computer all day long, so Twitter is easy for me because it's right in front of me. I am always thinking, how can I bless the people that are on that Twitter feed today? How can I help the people on my Facebook fan page love Jesus more? Because that's where I'm coming from. This is what I'm always thinking about, and often vulnerability is a part of that.
Yeah, that's good. So just realize that if you're trying to hide, and I've noticed this is another generational thing, the older someone is, the more that they have kind of their public face and their private face. And that approach doesn't work on social media. You have to be the same person everywhere you go. All right, we can talk more about this if you would like, just ask questions, but we're going to go on for now to point number five, which is that social media takes too much time. And this actually is also true. Almost all of these things can be true. And social media can take as much time as you give it. And like I said earlier, a lot of authors waste their time on social media. So a couple of tips for spending time on social media and how to keep it from taking too much time. Tip number one is to put your big rocks in first. Randy Ingermanson does this. Before he does anything else in the day, he spends an hour writing. And so If nothing else happens that day, he wrote. And Twitter is a small rock. The metaphor here is from Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. If you put big rocks into a jar, you can put in small rocks after that, and they'll all still fit. But if you put the small rocks in first, there's no room for the big rocks. And I would say social media is actually probably the sand. It's not even a small rock. It's what should fit into the margins of your life. And so one of the key ways of keeping Twitter and other social networks from taking too much time is to do them on a mobile device. Use a phone or a tablet and do social media during time that would normally be wasted. Don't do it at your computer. Or if you do it at your computer, batch. So there are some wonderful tools like Buffer and Hootsuite where you can batch your tweets and schedule them out in the future, which is a really good way of having an active presence without doing it, you know, every 3 hours. Oh, yeah, I've got to go. Because you can't spend 2 minutes on social media. You have to spend 15 because you get sucked in. So try to do it as infrequently as possible and get the biggest bang for your buck as possible. Also, Facebook fan pages can schedule posts. It's one of the dozen ways they're better than personal pages. I don't know of good ways to schedule posts in Pinterest. There's some tools that use it, but I think those tools violate Pinterest terms of service. And so with Pinterest, you have to get on and just use them. Use Pinterest at the time you use it. Another way to keep social media from taking too much time is to do it through your blog. So we get a dozen or more tweets from people around the web pointing to authormedia.com every day. And very few of those are retweets from the posts that we send out. We do get retweets on those. So how do we get so many tweets? Well, they come from two places. One, there's a badge at the top of every blog post that tells you how many times it's been tweeted. You can click the badge to tweet it yourself. Seeing that number at the top is a social proof that encourages people to do it themselves and makes them feel less risky to do it when they see, oh, wow, 100 people have tweeted this. I'll tweet it too. The second thing that we do is we have a click-to-tweet bulleted list in most of our posts that we put out now where there's two or three or five one-liners that they can click and send that one-liner out to their friends. And I, you know, there's posts that I wrote months ago that where I still get almost daily people tweeting quotes from that blog post because all they have to do is click to tweet. And so that's my presence, quote-unquote my presence, on social media without me having to spend any time. It's totally passive because of the blog post that I wrote in the past.
And I would say, I'm just putting it in the chat right now, one of the things that I've done that has really helped me is I composed about 100 tweets of things that I can rotate through in a month. And so I have already created them, and then I schedule them so that at least for me I'm getting one of my books highlighted maybe once a day or once every 2 days, or maybe some posts that I've written that have gotten high traffic that benefit people. And I made that in a big long list, and then I just go ahead and copy and paste them into I just do it in TweetDeck. And that way I know at least even if I'm gone or I can't get to Twitter, I'm at least tweeting twice a day, and I have covered all my bases. So I just put a link up in the chat that will help you do that.
All right. Tip number 6, our final tip before we get to your questions, and that is I don't know what works. And several of the questions that we had had to do with this sort of element. And so a couple of pointers here. First is figure out what works for other people and try it, but don't believe it until you've tried it. So something that works for Mary may not work for me because her audience is different from my audience. And something that works for me may not work for Mary. And what a lot of authors do is they're like, oh, wow, Michael Hyatt does it this way. Therefore, I have to do it the same way or it's not going to work. And that's not true. I know a guy who's in a very similar market to Michael Hyatt, selling a lot of the exact same sorts of products and services, makes as much money, if not more, than Hyatt, and uses a completely different strategy. So Hyatt's strategy is a blog, Twitter strategy. This guy uses a website and email strategy and as the primary drivers, and very, very effective because it plays to his strengths. And so the key here is to measure. I'd imagine if we were to poll the folks on this call, maybe 1% of you measure the effectiveness of social media against goals that you set out before you started to use social media. And if you measure, you know, here is my pat on your back, because that is great. So you got to measure to see what's working and what's not. So, for instance, Mary was measuring using Google Analytics to see if Pinterest was driving traffic to her website. So she's looking at the numbers. She's like, wow, we're getting a lot more visits to our website now that I'm using Pinterest. In fact, I'm getting twice as many visits to my website. We're having the same sort of results with Google+. Our Google rankings for the search engine results have gone way, way up since we added Google Plus integration to our blog. And our traffic has gone way up because of a completely different social network. We wouldn't know that if we weren't measuring. And so we'll get to how to use Google Analytics here in a little bit. But I will say this is, it's a little technical to add Google Analytics to your website, and you can't add it to every website, depending on what kind of website you got. So this is where you ask your web company to set up Google Analytics for you. And we'll get to more of that in a moment. But so a couple of quick tips. Facebook personal pages don't work. Any time you spend on your logged into Facebook as yourself on your personal page, that's not marketing. That's play. And so just take that off the table, because I'll tell you that doesn't work. I have not seen a single author ever use their Facebook personal page to help sell their book effectively. Why? Because the prophet is not without honor except in his hometown. And when someone says, you've got to read this book, it's by a friend of mine, if person A says that and person B says, you've got to read this book, it's really good, which is the stronger recommendation? Well, even if person A says it's really good, it's by a friend of mine, that's not a strong recommendation, because the fact that it's a friend's like, oh, it's just a local guy. You know, when you see a sticker in the bookstore that says by a local author, it doesn't raise your view of that book, it lowers that view of your book. And so someone being your quote-unquote friend makes them less likely to buy your book, not more likely to buy your book. How many of you have friends who are begging you to buy their book on Facebook, and you still haven't bought their book, even though they're a friend of yours, or quote-unquote a friend of yours? They have to be a really close friend for you to buy their book in that way, and that doesn't scale. And so that's just one tip for what doesn't work. You got to do it through a fan page. You got to learn how to add posts that are interesting to people on that fan page. But ultimately, what I recommend, and Michael Hyatt recommends the exact same thing, as does pretty much every other person who's out there talking about social media, is what's called the hub strategy. So a lot of authors, their approach to social media is a bunch of planes flying around with no real direction. And you've got to have a hub that's your home base that ultimately you're bringing everyone to, and that has got to be your website. Why? Because you own your website. No one else owns your website. Facebook owns your Facebook page. Twitter owns your Twitter page. And they could not like what you're saying, or there can be a glitch and it goes away tomorrow and you have nothing. Whereas your website and your email list that goes along with your website, you have full control over. And if you don't like your web company, fire them and go on to a different web company. You get to keep your website. You get to keep everything else, assuming you're working with a reputable web company. And so you have the language that Hyatt uses is, embassies in these different social networks that bring people back to your home base. Your website is where ultimately people are going to make a purchase. It's where people are going to sign up for your email list. And so you've got to have a strong website to have a strong social media presence. If you have a poor website, a poorly optimized website, a website that's not very effective, people come there and they don't subscribe, they don't buy. It's kind of like trying to run a marathon with a sprained ankle or a broken toe. You're just like every other step is pain. And you could do it theoretically, but it's so much harder. And what you really want is, healthy feet and good shoes so that you can do the distance with your online marketing. Mary, do you want
to? That's good. And let me add a little bit to that. In terms of your hub strategy, I just recently talked with an author who has a what we would call a business card website, which is just here's a picture of the author, here's a tab for books, and that's about it, maybe a contact and a speaking button. But there was no fresh content on the site. And one of the things that has been good for my site is, is blogging, and I know we haven't really talked about that much, but one of the beauties of blogging is that you're constantly creating fresh content for Google to crawl through. And as you create that fresh content with keywords and all of that stuff, and we'll talk about SEO in a while, but you have more of an ability to attract people to your site. And just today I wrote down six things that are the anatomy of a good blog post. So I'm going to share them with you now while we're in this hub strategy part of the talk. The first one is you need to have an awesome title for your post, and I'm really bad at that. Honestly, I'm really bad. Thomas will even tell you I'm not good at that. I have used the book Advertising Headlines That Make You Rich, which is also something recommended by Hyatt. That has helped me to write better headlines that people actually want to click through, because when I tweet the headline, if it's a boring headline, no one clicks my Twitter or my tweet to get back to my site. And that's one of the best ways to bring traffic to your site is to tweet about your post. But if you have a bad title, it's not going to work. Number two is what Thomas has already mentioned, and that's a tweet this or click the tweet option within the post. So you have a great title, and you also give people the opportunity to tweet what you have written. And that's, you can do that at clicktotweet.com. The title of that book was Advertising Headlines That Make You Rich, and when I'm done talking, I'll put a link in the little notes there. Number three, anatomy of a good blog post, is a vulnerable story. I get the most, and maybe that's just because this is what people expect from me, and it might be different for you, but for me, the best thing I can do is just say, hey, I'm having a terrible day, and people are just, they love it when I have terrible days. So when I'm vulnerable, that's when people really respond. Number four is a pinnable image, and I've talked about that already, and we'll send you that free PDF after we're done. Number five is great keywords that rock the house. So again, Thomas is going to talk about SEO and keywords, but if you have some good keywords in your post, there's more of a likelihood that Google will be happy with you. And then the last one is to ask the reader of your blog a question. At the very end, you want someone to interact with you on your blog. Now, some people close down questions. I personally like having questions because it means I'm interacting with my readers. And so almost every blog that I write has a question at the end so we can interact. So those are the six things. I'll say them again. Awesome title, a tweet this option, a vulnerable story, a pinnable image, keywords that rock, and ask the reader a question. And thank you, Jeffrey Prosser, for clicking. He just put the link up of the Advertising Headlines book. Thank you.
So that book is a little pricey, and it's worth it, in my opinion. I have it, and I found it really useful, and it helps you think in the right direction in terms of keywords in your headline. To talk about keywords here real quick, a good keyword or key phrase, because it's really about phrases, not about words, is phrases people are already searching for. And so you want to go on the Google Keyword Tool, and to find it, you just Google Keyword Tool, to see which phrases are more popular than others. I was working with a vacation rental company in France the other day, and I was doing some keyword research for them. They called themselves a vacation rental, and I was like, is there any other names or phrases you could use to describe what you do? She went through a couple, and one of them was Holiday House. Well, we put Holiday House, and it got three or four times the searches as vacation rental. Why? Because they're in France, and people don't use the word vacation in France. They use the word holiday. I'm going on a holiday, like we here in the States would say I'm going on a vacation. So that kind of research can dramatically affect how you rank. Because ranking number one for a phrase no one searches for, it's kind of like, yay. You get props, but you don't get any traffic. What you want to do is rank number one for phrases people are searching for. So with that, I want to talk quickly about author media. So some of you are stressed out about the website, and I know this isn't a website talk per se, but your website is the hub of your social media strategy or online platform. And what's unique about author media is that we hold your hand through the entire process of building your website. You have a single point person who answers all your questions. They are with you on any calls with a designer or a developer, and our goal is to completely eliminate that. I talked with my web person, I had no idea what they said, feeling. That just makes you feel awful. So we don't let our developers interact with our clients unsupervised. We have really, you know, smart nerds, and they're really good at what they do, but they're not really good at explaining what they do. And so we have people who hold your hand through the whole process, a project manager or an account manager. We have an integrated blog into every website that we have, so it's really easy to have fresh content, and we can import the blog over. If you're already at WordPress.com or Blogspot or Blogger.com, we can bring your blog over. And our websites come with My Book Table, which is currently the only way to get My Book Table. So what is My Book Table? Well, for listing books on your website, you have a couple of bad options. You have having a full-blown store where it's got all these features and functionality that you really don't need, and it's very, very expensive, and it's very complicated to use and very time-consuming. The other way is to just list the books on your website in some big, long pile. And typically you'll see this on websites where they have a books page, and it's a long list of books, and it's very difficult to use. It doesn't look very good, and it's not very effective at selling books. And so what we created was something called My Book Table, which is a happy medium. It's a store without being a store. It's all of the formatting features of a store and the ease of use and beauty parts without all the complicated credit card handling and shipping and all of that. So how does it work? Instead of a buy button, it's a buy from Amazon button or a buy from Barnes & Noble button that integrates in with Amazon's affiliate programs. They can click, and you don't just get paid your royalty for the book, you also get paid an affiliate commission from Amazon, not just for that your book, but for their entire cart. And so if they buy your book and a digital camera, you actually make quite a bit of money even off that one sale. So here's an example of it on one of our client websites. And the other really cool thing about My Book Table is that it's search optimized out of the box. So most authors don't rank for their own books on Google. If you Google their book title, Amazon comes up number one. If that author could come up number one, people will go to the author's website instead because it's the author's website, and then they'll click the Buy from Amazon button, and now you're getting affiliate revenue. This one change can be the difference between a few dozen dollars a month and a few hundred dollars a month from Amazon affiliates. So here's an example of a client ranking number one for one of her books. Our websites are built in WordPress, so it's easy to update. If you already know WordPress, you already know how to use our sites. If you don't know how to use WordPress, we build in tutorial videos that take you through step-by-step how to add a photo, how to have a page, etc. They're mobile compatible. In fact, now we're making most of our sites to be mobile responsive, so it resizes the site for someone on a mobile device like a phone or a tablet. And we do the heavy lifting to get it optimized for search engines, robots.txt, sitemap.xml, plugins that will give you suggestions and advice on how to rank. And we set up Google Analytics. So all that technical stuff, you don't have to worry about. And that's okay, because that's what we're here for, is to handle that for you. And then integrating it in with social media. Yes, ma'am.
Thomas, someone just asked in the chat how much this is. Do you have your prices for that?
We do. We're going to get there in two slides.
Okay, sorry.
Great question. So we're offering a free consultation to everybody on this call, 15 minutes. If you have any questions, we'd love to answer them. Just go to authormedia.com and click the big schedule consultation button. Our author website packages range from $2,500 to $5,000, depending on what features you want. But we are offering for you on this call a special Mary DeMuth special. Mary twisted my arm, and we've added almost $1,000 worth of value that you get with all three Author Media packages. The first is a one-year membership to the Bestseller Society, and that's a mastermind-level membership. So it's all of Mary's talks on nonfiction, how to write great nonfiction, how to do online marketing. All of my talks on online marketing, so we're talking dozens of hours of our expertise. And then also we have a fiction academy with Jeff Gerke talking and sharing everything he knows about writing excellent fiction. And then a free email newsletter set up and designed to match your website. So just
mention
Mary's name.
And Thomas, do you have a slide for the My Book Table? I think that was what the question was for.
Okay, so my book table is not for sale yet. Right now it's only available to people who buy one of those packages. We will be creating a Kickstarter for it, and we'll send you an email when we launch it as its own standalone product. It's going to range from, we'll have a free version that's just Amazon, but we'll have, a $50 version and a $99 version as well. We're not quite have the pricing finalized. It'll be cheaper, though, if you get the Kickstarter. Now, we're offering something special, and I'm going to tell you about it on this call, and I'm going to ask that you not spread it because it's still in beta, but it's something called Author Websites. And this is a new product that we're launching where the websites start at $250 instead of $2,500. And it's our technology without our handholding. So we've created a system in this kind of hidden version of WordPress called WordPress Multisite that's more than what you have at WordPress.com, but not quite as complicated or as powerful as what you have with WordPress.org. And we've built some specific themes for authors where you can go in and very easily have a website with an integrated blog. Here are our packages. Now, this is in beta, which means we're limiting this to only 20 sites a month that we're launching in author websites. And normally you'd have to pay for support kind of on a per-use basis, but during the beta period we're having unlimited support because we want to make it as easy to use as possible. So we're actually on the phone with you. What did you like? What did you not like? What color schemes do you want? So we don't have all the color schemes built in yet. So if there's a set of color schemes you want, of colors you want, we may add your colors. So if you're interested in this, you just hit that same schedule consultation button. The website isn't even up advertising this yet. This is very much a hush-hush deal, but we feel that these are really good packages, especially for a fiction author who doesn't have a whole lot of budget yet for their book. And we have a special for this where you get the year membership for the Bestseller Society, but you don't get the email like you do with the author media packages. So with that, we'll be sending out 10 steps to make a pin with PicMonkey to everyone who came to this call. And with that, we will go to questions. So the first question is from Dawn. She asks, when I started my Facebook page, I got a lot of likes within the first few days. Can I replicate that? And the answer is yes, but not the way you did it the first time. So what most likely happened on, and I don't know the story behind your website, but what most people do is they create a Facebook page, and then there's an option where you can invite your friends to like that page that Facebook lets you do one time per friend. And so you send out those initial invites to all of your friends, and some of them will click over. Typically, we've seen it's between 10 and 25% of your friends will click over and like your fan page, and sometimes as low as 5%. To get big boosts of likes at this point, you need to do some sort of marketing, either guerrilla-style marketing of giving people flyers for your book or online, promoting it through your blog, or the most effective way to get more likes is to advertise on Facebook. We've found that this is incredibly effective at giving people dramatic results. We've taken clients from 20,000 likes to 30,000 likes in 10 days, or from 2,000 likes to 10,000 likes in 2 weeks. With effective Facebook advertising. So if you're wanting dramatic growth in likes on Facebook, that is the best way to do it. And this can actually help you get published. I know Zondervan, when they have their pitch fest, trying to decide which books to buy from authors, they have a bio of the author and how many Facebook fans they have and how many Twitter followers they have right there on the sheet of paper for each author. So it's a main element that they look at. All right, Nicole asks, can you explain SEO? From what I understand of it, it's keywords. Is that true? Is there a book you'd recommend to understand it better? Nicole, SEO can be very complicated. I have friends, and all they do all day long is search engine optimization, studying it and doing the advanced elements of it. So there is no simple answer to this question. I have a talk on it in the Bestseller Society. The book SEO for Dummies or Search Engine Optimization for Dummies is really good. But let me give you a couple of very quick pointers. Pointer number one, above everything else, is to write content worth sharing. Write remarkable content that people want to share with their friends on Twitter or on Facebook. It's stuff that people find valuable. If you're not writing valuable content, there's no way it's going to rank because Google knows. You are not going to outsmart Google. They hire people who get 4.0s at Harvard. you didn't get a 4.0 at Harvard, and so you're not going to win that. So don't try to outsmart them. Try to play their game according to their rules, which is providing good content. That said, you want to make sure that your title is got the right key phrases in it that people are searching for. It gives people a reason to click, and it's no longer than 60 characters. In your meta description, which is the text that goes underneath the title on a search results page, is no more than 140 characters. So those are some quick SEO tips. For more, there's a lot of great blogs on search engine optimization. SEO Moz is one of the best. And then, of course, my talk on the Bestseller Society. Mary, do you have any questions from the chat, or are we just going to keep going through the list here?
I think we'll just keep going. I've been trying to answer them as I go. I've been kind of a ninja here trying to figure it all out.
Very good.
Let's see.
All right.
Might want to jump around. Choose another question.
All right. Here's a question from Hong. I'm a middle grade fantasy author. I'd like to start vlogging to address themes mentioned in my novel and interact with my target audience, parents and librarians. What are your suggestions to start doing this? My first suggestion is to make sure the audio in your vlog is good. And for those of you who don't know, a vlog is a video blog. It's where you record your video, preferably on YouTube, and then embed it on your blog. Now, vlogging is perhaps not the best way to reach librarians. Because if I'm a librarian and I sit in a library all day, I can't watch a video because that would be violating the number one rule of libraries, which is not to make noise. And so you may consider blogging, just traditional blogging instead. But get a good microphone, get a good camera, make the quality of the videos that you're posting as good as possible. And I would also go and try to find where the librarians and parents hang out now and join that community before trying to get them to come over to your thing. All right, next question is from Teresa. I spend so much time maintaining a website and keeping up with the trends of social media that I don't have time for the part I really enjoy, which I'm assuming is the writing. How do I get around this quandary? Mary will have some tips on this, but I will say first is to put the part you really enjoy, if it's the writing, do that first, because that's what's most important. Ultimately, what brings money in the door, what influences people is writing, sitting in front of Microsoft Word or Scribe, and putting words on your screen. Another thing I would do is I would look at how you're keeping up with the trends. The easiest way to do that is to follow someone else or some other blogs that are doing most of the heavy lifting for you, like follow Author Media, follow Michael Hyatt, Seth Godin, and some of those people. So that let us do the filtering for you, and you only get what's really important. And that can save you a lot of time without really hurting your savvy. Mary, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I think your rock illustration is great there. Personally, me, I'm a writer. I love to write. I don't necessarily love tinkering with social media. I want to get words down on the page, so I make it a priority to write books and blogs first before I think about the other things. That's why I'm here. That's why God put me on this earth, is to write words that change lives. So I just make sure that it's a priority, and I let the other things go. Those things have to come first.
All right, next question, very similar from Shannon. I enjoy social media, but also find it distracts from my work. How can I effectively engage without sapping my energy and creativity? Well, other than putting the big rocks in first, Shannon, I would say turn social media off. So have times when you do it very focused and intentionally, and then turn it off. Don't leave your Twitter app running in the background, pinging you every time there's a new tweet. And I'd also say turn off email. So a lot of people use Outlook, which I don't like. But if you do use Outlook, turn off the fact that it checks for new email every 5 minutes. I think that is one of the biggest killers of productivity in the United States. Turn it off completely, where it only checks for new email when you click send and receive. And that puts you in control instead of the program in control. IBM did a study and found that when someone is working on a project and they go to email, when they get a reminder, it takes them 30 minutes on average to get back to that project. And so it doesn't take very many emails for you to suddenly not get anything done, and you're not doing writing. Instead, you're switching between tasks, wasting your time. All right. Question from Linda. I feel stressed about building my platform before I even approach a traditional publisher with my manuscript. How much weight do publishers put on a platform with high numbers of followers before you approach them with book proposal? Well, Shannon, the answer is it depends. Writers write fiction. Leaders write nonfiction. So successful nonfiction especially is written by people who have other people following them, or by people who have a platform. For fiction, it's not as important. I believe that when publishers tell authors and reject their novels because they don't have a platform, it's just an easier way of saying, we didn't like your story. Because if they really liked your story, if they really liked your characters, they'd buy your fiction, your novel, regardless of your platform, especially if it's your first novel. And so, you know, if you're just getting started, that's why we created these really cheap packages. It was for the novelist who really needs to be spending 95% of their time on their book, because spending time on your platform is not going to get you there. You know, people aren't going to buy your novel because they follow you on Twitter or because they read your blog. It just doesn't work out that way. Now, if you write nonfiction, totally different. People absolutely will buy your book if they like your blog, or if they see you as an expert because you've been talking about your topic on Facebook and on Twitter and on social media. And so this is where you really need a distinction. This is when it's tough when you go to a writer's conference, because almost all of the talks are for both fiction and nonfiction writers, when the advice is really different. Now, if you're already published and you're a novelist, the rules change a little bit. The goal of your platform is to capture the contact information and permission of the people who read your first book so you can tell them about your second book. If your publisher has no idea, I was on a phone call with the major publisher for a client we're doing some marketing for, and you know, I just asked them, who bought the last book? This is an author who's written two books already. One sold almost 100,000 copies. And so it's like, so who? And he had no idea. He had no idea even where to go to start. He had no idea who had purchased the previous books, which is crazy in any sort of other industry. You know, Dell knows exactly who's buying their computers. Apple knows exactly who's buying their iPods. So you can tell them when the next iPod comes out. And so it's up to you as the author to capture that contact information. So you just need permission. It doesn't really matter where. Twitter, Facebook, email, you know, subscribing to your blog, any of those places will help you sell those subsequent books. So for nonfiction, your platform is there to help you sell your first book. For fiction, your platform is there to help you sell your second book. And then there's the people like Mary who write both fiction and nonfiction just to keep it interesting.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, someone had a question on that in the chat. They said, well, what if you write both? And my answer to that was, your brand really matters at that point, because my brand is Liz Uncaged, which encapsulates both my fiction and nonfiction. When I'm writing fiction, it deals with people becoming uncaged from their past. And when I write nonfiction, it's the same thing. So you might want to think about going to a brand expert and or your friends or whatever, and really trying to figure out who you really are. The other option is to be a bit schizophrenic and divide yourself in half so that you have a nonfiction site and a fiction site and just be two different people. I found it a little bit easier and less schizophrenic to keep it in under one house. So it's worked for me, but again, not everything that I do is going to work for you, and not everything you do is going to work for me. So there's grace in all of that as well.
Right. And the
we
the
are
more
close
similar
to the end here.
Them, so. Yeah, we have time for one or two more questions. Just briefly, C.S. Lewis did both. His fiction and nonfiction very closely tied. So Mere Christianity, he says, when Jesus claimed to be God, he was either a liar or he was a lunatic or he was telling the truth and he's Lord. Those are really the only three options. You can't say that he was a good man when he made those kinds of claims. Well, then you pick up The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Lucy comes back from Narnia. Edmund's claiming there is no Narnia. They go to see the professor, and the professor says, well, Lucy's either lying or she's crazy or she's telling the truth. Like, what does that sound like? Oh, that sounds just like, you know, this nonfiction book that he wrote. You know, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is essentially a fictionalized version of Mere Christianity, and that's one thing that helped him. All right, quick questions, and then we will turn off the recording and let you all go. Don, asks, how do I grow my Twitter followers and use Twitter to grow my Facebook page? Okay.
I can jump in on that, Thomas.
Yeah.
To grow your Twitter followers is really just to not pay for someone to help you do that, because that's almost always a scam. And don't click links that say get more Twitter followers, because that also is like usually illegal in some way. So don't do that. The best way is to tweet well, to follow people, and to provide great content. And in terms of using Twitter to grow your Facebook page, really hard to do. It's kind of an odd thing to say, hey, come join my fan page. Some people do autoresponders after someone follows them that says, hey, meet me at my Facebook page. But I never, ever, ever click on those because it's annoying to me. So please don't do those kind of auto-follow or auto-responder kind of things, because then it really does make you like a robot, and I don't think it's effective in gaining followers on Facebook.
Yeah, and they're very different communities, too. What works on Facebook doesn't work on Twitter. And so trying to have a one-size-fits-all approach or using some tool that sends the same message to five different social networks doesn't work. And anyone trying encouraging that is not measuring, because if you measure, you'll find that that doesn't work. So it's almost better to be silent on a social network than it is to shuffle content from another social network. People don't want to see links to your Facebook posts on Twitter. All right. Some people were saying they wanted to hear more about Google+. I'm going to give you all a very quick pitch for Google+, because I really like it, if you're trying to reach the Google+ audience. So here I am at google.com. If you have a Google account, you should see a plus Thomas up here or a plus you. You can sign up for Google+. It just doesn't take very long. It's pretty straightforward. I won't explain that. So Google+ has, these are normal posts, you know, people sharing links or videos just like you'd see on any other sort of social network. But there's also a What's Hot feature, which is where it's kind of like Reddit or kind of like StumbleUpon. This is something that a lot of people have been plus wanting. And I found that there's a lot of really cool stuff here in the What's Hot to see what's trending. It's kind of like a trending topic on Twitter. So here's where the really cool part of Google Plus comes in. Here's a post. Let's say, hello world. Now I want you to see down here where it says public. I can kill that, and I only want to share this with the author community, or I only want to share this with my mastermind group or with my company. It has the best privacy features of any social network. So you can use this just to talk to a group of five people very, very effectively. I really like this. And it's got a circles feature right here that's integrated with that. So these are my circles, you know, author community. Oh, Kathy Lipp, she's an author. I just drag her and drop her in to add, of course she's already in, to add her to the author community. Oh, Sarah Cowles, I know she's working on a book. Just drop her in and just adds her to that circle. So now I can share posts just with that circle or with any combination of circles. Another really cool feature of Google Plus is Hangouts. This is perhaps the best feature. You can have a video conversation with up to 10 people. Oh, so amazing. Mary and I are on a Hangout every couple weeks with a bunch of other experts where we just share advice and encouragement with each other, and it's one of the most life-giving social media things that I have that I do throughout the month because it's so real. You're interacting with someone face-to-face or 5 or 10 people face-to-face, and there's a realness to that you really can't get anywhere else without spending a lot of money. So those are some real quick features of Google+. I'd love to connect with you on Google+. It also has the best mobile app, in my opinion. It's just beautiful. And being on Google+ boosts your Google rankings considerably for your website. Google puts a lot of weight on how many plus ones you have for your posts. So with that, Mary, do you have any closing statements or comments?
Well, I just want to say that, and we mentioned this earlier, but do what works for you. Choose, like Thomas said, choose one or two that you love or that seem to fit your personality and do them well. And also don't freak out about it. Just do what you feel comfortable with. And for me personally, that is Twitter and somewhat Facebook and now Pinterest. So the more I focus, the better I am. And one of the things that I learned last year is is the phrase, choose small, tend large. So you're better off to choose something small and become great at it than to choose 10 things and be really mediocre at those 10 things and get worn out. So choose one and
That's
tend
exactly
it large.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's a Chinese proverb I've been meditating on for a couple months now that is, the man who chases two rabbits catches neither one. So there's a lot to be said about focusing your efforts. So with that, we hope you've enjoyed this webinar. Feel free to connect with us. You can find Mary at marydemuth.com or at marydemuth on Twitter. You can find me at Thomas Umstadt. You can also find us at authormedia.com and at authormedia. That's a much more active account than at Thomas Umstadt. All right, thank you very much.